everyone, and welcome to American Girl Unboxed, the podcast where we dive deep into the stories, styles, crafts, and snacks of the American girls we grew up with. I'm Grace, and today we'll be talking about Samantha Learns a Lesson and all the fun extras that go with that book. Joining me to talk about the book today is Victor, and later we'll have Katie on to discuss the doll and extras.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to talk about the new Girl of the Year. I'm here with Katie.
Woohoo!
And the Girl of the Year for 2026 just recently dropped this week or last week. And so we're going to check her out, review her real quick before we go on to talk more about Samantha's book and everything else. So, Katie, you said your mom sent it to you?
My mom sent it to me. You sent it to me. I think it came through on my For You page. So
yes.
Seeing Raquel everywhere.
So before we talk about the doll, her story is really interesting. And the reason why it makes sense to put it into this episode is that she is Samantha's great-great-granddaughter. And I guess her story is going to be, so she lives in Kansas City, Missouri, with her dad, who is Mexican-American, her mom, and her, I think, little brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to go to the East Coast for summer plans where her relative lives. I don't think it specifies who it is, but basically a direct descendant of Samantha. And this woman is in Samantha's, like, Grand Mary's house, I believe. And so Raquel goes there to visit family and goes for the summer. And she ends up finding, I think, Samantha's, like, diary or journal or whatever. And that's part of the storyline. And so I don't really know too much from there, but I'm really excited to see this connection. Katie, how do you feel about the fact that Girl of the Year is being tied right now to a historical figure, which they've never done before, other than Courtney, who had a Molly doll, which is a whole different angle.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting take, especially if, I mean, Samantha is released right now as part of the American Girl collection, but it's been, her access has been, you know, there and then gone. So I think it's a really interesting take marketing wise. I do love that even though she's related to this historical character, that she has a vibe of her own. She's totally a new character. She's got some ties back to Samantha, but it's not overtly, this is Samantha. And it's not like a redo. So, I mean, yeah. Obviously we're not all redos of our ancestors and our relatives. So I think that's something that is really cool.
Yeah. And I love that they chose the Joss head sculpt for her, because people have talked about how it's kind of the updated classic mold. And so Samantha is a classic mold.
Yep.
And, you know, so I feel like Raquel kind of looks similar but still different. She has lighter brown eyes, which is like the original Samantha had those, and so that's an homage to Samantha as well. She has darker hair than Samantha though, but she also has like
the sort classic of classic curls.
Yeah, the curls at the end just like Samantha. Yeah. And she has it half up like Samantha, but instead of, you know, she doesn't have bangs, and then she has like another sort of plaid type outfit but completely updated and different than Samantha. So mm-hmm. It is I totally agree with you. It's just a really nice homage to Samantha without being too similar. And then as far as her collection, Katie, did you get a chance to look at any of their outfits or anything like that?
I didn't, but I'm seeing an iPhone and her accessories, and that makes me really sad. But I do love the pickleball set. That's super cute.
There's a pickleball set. There is...
Oh, the beach set.
There's a beach set.
Little, like, swimsuit. And then the popsicles or the paletas.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
I'm not typically a bathing suit girly, but I do like this one. Like, I think it is really cute. Like, that's just not a line that I want to necessarily collect for the dolls, but I think Raquel's is very cute. And then she has, like, a barbecue set. She has a couple dolphins you can buy and, like, a little seaside car. My favorite outfit, though, I think is her beach party dress. I think it's super cute. It has some sort of, like, Mexican-looking inspired embroidery on it.
And it's in Samantha's go-to color scheme.
Yes.
Especially the Be Forever Samantha.
Yes. Yes. So she pairs very nicely. I've seen some pictures on social media where people have both dolls and they show them side by side and they look so cute together. So yeah, this is Raquel, and we're both, I think, excited about it. I think it was a very smart move. Like Katie was talking about the marketing piece of it. I think a very smart move on American Girl's part, because I think it will appeal to younger girls, but also for adult collectors who a lot of adult collectors focus more on the historical line. And so this is just a tie-in to get people like me who only collect the historical line to maybe want to get a Girl of the Year. So I feel like that was like very well done. I don't know if I will get her necessarily, but I do want to read her book. So that's something that I think we might try to do, is read and review Raquel's book, because she does tie into Samantha. So we'll see, TBD on that. Okay, so now we will go back into the regularly scheduled program. And here is me and Victor. So to start, Samantha Learns a Lesson is written by Susan S. Adler and illustrated by Nancy Niles and R. Grace. And then I do have the copy that Victor and I read is the first Scholastic printing from 1990. So Victor, let's get started with the cover. What did you think just looking at the cover?
So the cover immediately gives to me of like, what's that one movie? It's a horror movie. And I think it's just maybe like the dress and black hair, but what was like Orphan or something like that?
The Orphan?
Yeah, where I think it's mostly...
or it the just, Orphanage.
I think it's the Orphan, because the woman actress looks a lot like Samantha in this illustration. Yeah, it's a little girl, where she's like possessed or something. I don't know. I've never seen
I've
it.
Never
not
seen
really
it
my
either.
Thing, but yeah, I mean, that was like...
Okay,
the
it's
immediate,
a little creepy.
Honest reaction was, no, like, because I... immediately identified that, okay, this is a student doing schoolwork, but dressed in horror film of 2020s.
You did say you liked her outfit, too.
I did like her outfit, right?
Maybe that could be a Halloween costume, or like decor. We could dress her up in that and have her.
Depends, because I would like to make sure I sleep at night. If it's too scary, it could be too scary. Too early to tell.
If we had that and then played some of the music that you played for us earlier tonight.
A little bit of ragtime music, because that was very popular in the early 1900s.
Well, the ragtime was fun. I liked that. But then you also played this like 1904 playlist that was really creepy.
Yes, that because it was basically a list of like the top. To somebody's top 30. I don't know who's still like keeping track of like what the hits were. But it was a compilation, about 20 minutes long, of the top 30 songs of 1904. And obviously in 20 minutes, you're not going to get all like the full versions of the song. So it would just go from one to another real quickly. And it just like created it. This was before you could really do mashups. Because it was mashed up terribly. You know how you have like songs that mash up now and like they work?
Yeah.
Like Glee
they didn't.
Or this, whoever made this video did not. So it was a little haunting through a lot of it.
We had a haunting dinner eating our carrot soup and listening to 1904 music. But
yep, going into it, I just wanted to be like, okay, we're going to be recording tonight. So, and I know that we had a little bit of a meal. Inspired from American Girl.
Yeah.
And I thought, let's add a little American Girl ambiance. And much to my surprise, it was not pleasant at all.
But it was fun. I like that you put it on. It was, anyway. So
I tried.
All that to be said, it fit the vibe of the cover, according to you, because it was a little creepy.
how about that?
I will say, so the desk on there, Victor and I saw a real version of that desk at an antique fair a few weeks ago, but we definitely don't have room in our small house for that. Also would have been super heavy, but I did see the Samantha version on Facebook Marketplace, and I wasn't like trying to collect. I do like to collect a lot of the stuff, but like I wasn't trying to collect her desk specifically. But it was only $10. But I did message the seller and they have not gotten back to me. So I'm guessing that it already sold. But I've seen like quite a few of Samantha's desks pop up for like really good prices. So if anyone out there really wants her desk, check out local listings, because I feel like it was very popular and there's a lot out there for a good price.
Yeah, I remember the one that you showed me on Facebook Marketplace. I think the one that was for $10, not because of the price, but because of just what it looked like. I thought it was very cute. So
yeah, it is cute. I know I would have bought it, but she, like I said, didn't respond to me. So we'll see. Maybe she'll still get back. Okay, so now on to a couple of fun facts. Well, no, one fun fact about the time period and then one sort of more less fun event that happened. Mm. So the fun fact is there is a soda that we still drink today that was introduced right around this time in in 1898. So I did not buy it this time. I just thought I should have, but I didn't think about it until we already sat down to record. So what do you think is a soda that would have been around in the late 1800s?
So I want to say it's got to be either... It's got to be either Coca-Cola, Coke, or like root beer.
It is a root beer, yeah. Oh,
yes.
And any guesses what brand?
No. Well, A&W?
No, good guess though. Well, and I say no, maybe it was. That's not the one I have listed. The one I have listed is Barks root beer.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I think it says it on the can.
1898.
But I just, something like... It does, doesn't it? I don't drink enough Barks to know. I usually like to go with like the off kilter, like really like I've never seen brand before bottled.
Do you remember when we did that root beer flight with my dad?
Yes. Yeah. We got to taste quite a variety of different root beers.
Yes. That was fun.
Yeah.
Did you enunciate that just specifically because I mispronounce root beer? Because you just said root beer.
Whatever do you mean? I don't know what you mean by that.
I noticed that when I was a sixth grade teacher in Arizona. So we're from the Midwest and I have, I think, a very Michigan accent. And when I was teaching my sixth graders in Phoenix, Arizona, I said root beer. And they could not understand me. They didn't even like have a guess as to what I meant.
What's a rut?
Anyway, okay. So the second thing I want to talk about from this time period, like I said, is not a fun fact. It's actually a very tragic story that happened that relates to the topic in Samantha Learns a Lesson. So Samantha Learns a Lesson, we're going to find out a little bit more about Nellie's background working in a factory. And sadly, there was a factory fire in 1911 in New York City. It was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire. And in this situation, a fire broke out in an 8-story factory. And because back then, often the foremen would lock the doors because they were trying to prevent workers from taking breaks or from stealing things. Because of that, 146 women and girls died in this factory fire. So that was just something that at the time when that happened, it did kind of raise that question of why were the doors locked?
Right.
And it was a tragedy that could have been
100% avoided.
Prevented
as far as like the scope of the damage.
Of the deaths, yeah.
The deaths especially, that's terrible. And I know that there is still a lot of improvements that need to be made, but it's nice to know that like from there to today, at least in, we can say for American factories that there have been enough improvements where hopefully things like, you know, that when they, if they do happen, you know, they're put in place to help and protect the workers.
Yeah. And I think one reason I do like this book, not to jump the gun, but I do like this book a lot. And I think one reason why it's a great book is because it shines a light on a part of history that I feel like we don't focus on a lot in school. Because I think when you learn history in school, you're really often focusing on politics and wars and things like that, and less about lives of everyday people and how often people were mistreated and in situations that were harmful, like the working conditions. So, I mean, I think I remember briefly touching on it and maybe like ninth grade history. I don't know, but it wasn't something I dove deep into. So it was, I like that this book like shined a light on that.
Yeah, same. And I think that is probably one of the things that got me most excited about kind of doing this series with you is to make some comparisons and, you know, really start to like, especially when you compare where we are today to 1904, I'm very appreciative of all of the modern benefits that make life way easier for us now than, you know, however life was then.
I think something cool about this book specifically is that they really do focus on the different inventions that are occurring right during this time period. Like the turn of the century, like I never realized how many things were being invented and coming into everyday use at that time period.
Yeah, it happened quick. And it was definitely one of those time periods that we really got to see, not to be a spoiler here, a lot of progress.
Okay, so let's get into the book a little bit. Okay. Since we're already going into the plot.
I can't wait.
So, well, first of all, I did want to, like, at the very beginning of the book, we talked about the cover, and then the next thing that's in the book, you know, a couple pages in every single book, are these portraits, which we didn't discuss in book one. So I want to just quick mention it, because those were, as a kid, those were always my favorite thing. I loved looking at the portraits, and I loved looking from, like, book to see how they changed, like what characters were added or taken away. Mm. And I will say, I did double check, and the portraits in this book are the same as Meet yes. Samantha. But I thought, like, okay, if you take a look, now that you've read the book,
yeah,
do any of the portraits stand out as, like, why is this still here?
Having read the book, I think Cornelia and Eddie are the first to come to mind.
Yeah. Because neither of them were actually technically in the book. They right. were both mentioned.
Yes, but very briefly.
Yes.
I would say Eddie probably had a slightly more tie-in to this book, but again, both still absent, so Cornelia.
And let me just quick give you a rundown of the portraits. So again, these are the same that were in Meet Samantha. We have Grand Mary, we have Nellie, Samantha, Uncle Guard, Cornelia, Hawkins, Mrs. Hawkins, Jesse, who also I do not think was in this book.
No.
So that's another one we could swap out.
Yeah.
And then we have Elsa, who is the maid, and Eddie. Yeah, so like three of the characters at least are not, I think just three of the characters are not in this book at all. Two are mentioned. I don't think Jesse is even mentioned that I remember. But I was thinking, like, we should have Edith in here. There's sort of like a mean girl in this book
yes.
that we'll get to. And so, like, anyway, so just
we'll
thinking,
get to her in a sec.
Yeah, looking at the portraits, I do love them, but I feel like they kind of phoned in on this one because they didn't really make the updates they should have. Okay, so getting into chapter one, the beginning of the book starts with Samantha in school. And back during this time, wealthy children often went to a private academy that would have been in a house with like two or three rooms set aside to be classrooms. So this is sort of the setup that Samantha has. Often in this situation, there would be three or four girls in a grade with several grades sharing a classroom. Samantha's school most likely would have been all girls, and they would have studied reading, spelling, history, arithmetic, geography, and penmanship. They might also have practiced dancing, French, drawing, and things like how to be graceful. So in this book, it starts with Samantha's friend passing her a note. And this made me think about how, you know, you and I in middle school passed notes, not to each other because we didn't know each other, but it was such a big thing in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, we definitely would have passed notes to each other, though, if we went to the same school.
And obviously. I just know that you folded it like a football or whatever.
So, okay, wow. Okay, so fun story. Here we go. We're doing it. I can't believe you brought that up. So I actually have a story.
You do?
Yes, about me and folding a note is as a paper football. It was eighth grade. New teacher comes in, new to the school, right? And literally the very first day of school. So the desks are arranged in a horseshoe, and she is sitting at the open end of the horseshoe on a stool, and she turns around to the board behind her and starts to write out instructions, because again, first day of school, first day of eighth grade, let's start things off right. And me and a friend from across the horseshoe, right?
Yeah.
Are beginning to flick footballs.
Oh, no.
Across to each other. Whenever she wasn't looking. Then there was one time where I thought she was going to turn, and I flicked this thing, and I literally, I swear, time slowed down immensely. Like, it was just, everything slowed down so much that I saw her eyes follow the paper football that was now just traveling directly in front of her face, and I'm thinking, oh no, she sees this. And immediately, time comes back to normal speed. It lands on his desk, and I look at her, and she's looking at me already. And she says, see me after class. And that, it was like the first period or whatever. So after class, she told me I had my first lunch detention. So.
And that was your first day of school?
First day of eighth grade.
Oh my gosh.
Not just school, eighth grade.
So
she ended up being a really cool teacher. We bonded after that. Things were mended and no more paper footballs in that class, at least.
Okay. Well, that story must have been somewhere in the back of my mind, because I just totally could picture you. You also just seem like that kind of kid that would have like had that like fun football shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about how nowadays parents are saying that kids aren't passing notes anymore because of texting. That just is wild to me to think about the fact that over 100 years ago, they were passing notes. We passed notes. And now in our lifetime, it has become sort of obsolete. And so it's just one of those things that was around for so long. And now it's no longer really a thing.
I know. And immediately I thought, how sad. Yeah. Although maybe they have replaced it with something else. But I just don't think they could have replaced it with something that could match the excitement of getting that paper note in 7th or 8th grade as a kid, where it's like you receive it, you're like, oh my gosh, what is this filled with? Like, how do you replicate
that?
Well,
yeah, they replace it with texting, which is not that.
That is not as exciting,
no,
right?
It is not at all. Okay, so back to the story. She gets passed a note, and in the note, her friend Helen has written, Helen is another person who could have had a portrait. She has written, "What the Dickens does LaGorge mean?" Which I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Samantha reads this and immediately she is worried that she's going to get caught, because Dickens is like almost a swear word. And I sort of love that. And I kind of want to use "what the Dickens" now.
Same.
That's a fun turn of phrase. So their teacher, Miss Stevens, doesn't catch her passing the note, but she does, of course, call on Helen for the definition of LaGorge, which apparently is a French word. And you know, I took 3 years of French, do not remember learning this word. I remember about 2 vocabulary words, period. So Samantha tries to give Helen a clue about what it means, but it doesn't work. And another girl, Edith, gets it right by saying throat. I was curious, Victor, do you know what throat is in Spanish?
Garganta.
Okay, so not too similar. I mean, they both start with G.
Start with a G, a couple extra syllables.
Yeah. So anyway, Edith gets the answer correct. She seems like sort of a know-it-all. That's how she's being painted. She kind of reminds me of the character Nellie from Little House on the Prairie, for anyone who has watched that.
Now, we've never met Edith before, right? She wasn't in the first book, I don't think.
Not that I remember.
Me neither. Okay.
Next is lunch, and Samantha is eating outside with 3 friends. I loved this image in the book.
Same. I wrote that down as something that I wanted to speak on. So
it's
to
so
me,
cute.
It just was. Yeah, it gave me a lot. So one of my favorite painters is Norman Rockwell. I think he really captures a lot of like really interesting times. And then probably like early 1900s. I can't think back. Like, they're more like 1940s, maybe 1950s or 60s that I really remember as Norman Rockwell. But this one, obviously not in the same style as Norman Rockwell, but it gave me the same sense of like, okay, this is a snapshot in history of like, these are what friends used to do at school, where like Norman Rockwell would always capture stuff to me from what I can remember of, you know, different events growing up in summers, right? So seeing this, 4 friends, 4 girls, just like having a good time, seeing that image, I thought was like, oh, that was a really well-placed and memorable, perhaps maybe even iconic image for Samantha's story.
I love that comparison to Norman Rockwell, because it's just like kind of cozy and slice of life. And yeah, I loved this image, and I really loved paying attention to what all of the girls were eating, because I don't know. Like,
Hold on. I'm opening it up now.
I just, food to me is one of the joys of life. And that's why a lot of my facts revolve around food and snacks.
Sandwiches.
Yes. And in the book, it does specify a little bit. So her friend, Samantha's friend, Ida, is eating a chopped, you're going to hate this, but I think it sounds delicious, a chopped olive sandwich.
What is that? Just olive?
I don't know.
Like
I didn't,
one olive?
I should have Googled it, but I'm wondering if I'm picturing it like an olive burger where you like mix mayonnaise and green olives, chopped green olives.
Oh, okay.
And that just sounds so good. So,
no.
So that's what Ida is eating. Ruth is eating something with jelly, because she's licking jelly off her fingers.
Oh, yeah. Ruth.
And then Samantha is eating gingerbread, but I do know what is in Samantha's lunch because they American Girl came out with like a lunch set.
Yes.
Which we do have.
We do.
And Samantha, in Samantha's lunch, she has the gingerbread, and then she also has a watercress sandwich, which they also do mention in the book. She has a peach, which I think is in the image.
I don't see a peach.
Turn the page.
Oh.
There's like a small image on the next page that I think has the peach.
Oh, yeah. Yep, right next to the gingerbread. So yeah. That's Sam's box.
Yes. Yep. So she has the gingerbread and the peach, but then also not mentioned in the book, but in the set that you can buy, they added a deviled egg. The version.
Ooh, yum.
I love deviled eggs. The version that I have does not come with the deviled egg, though, probably because it was not book accurate. So.
Ooh.
They also mentioned that she has some milk. So I thought that was just fun to read up on what they were eating. And then the gingerbread, while she's eating it, reminds Samantha of Nellie. And so she starts to worry about Nellie, who left to go back home last summer in book one. And she said Nellie's apartment, you know, she's remembering that Nellie's apartment was only one room and the air always smelled. The room was too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter. And she also knew Nellie said her family was always hungry. So Samantha has a hard time enjoying her food now that she's thinking about all of this.
Listen, I have to say, you know how I feel about Sam and Nellie's relationship after that first book, but like this book really, I think, spoke well to the continued development of that bond between Samantha and Nellie. And so like for her to kind of have that moment of gingerbread, oh, my girl Nellie, like, you know, where is she, like, who knows what she's doing right now, but she's my friend and I miss her. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, gingerbread is going to remind me of Nellie now too, because it's like, oh, this friendship is just so sweet to see kind of blossom into what it's blossoming.
Yeah, I agree. Their friendship is really sweet, and it is nice that Samantha is still thinking about Nellie all these months later. Back to the kids though, and their conversation, like as they're eating all this food, they're having some conversation about stretches that they have to do in school.
This was probably one of my favorite parts. Well, number one, I don't remember really hearing about Samantha's different friends at school, but they each already are giving me vibes. And it was interesting to hear kind of like what their thoughts on stretching was. Ida is one of Sam's friends. She's like really concerned about arm stretches. Helen, knee bends. No number, just knee bends, not doing it for her. And then it got me thinking, that seems really odd that Miss Crampton is dedicating a portion of the day, I think it was like around 1 p.m., where she's going to lead the class in stretching. There was a huge emphasis on corrective exercises and posture, and so this actually would happen in classes like Sam's, where a teacher would come in and they would do different stretches. So it was just interesting to me that was something that was done, because I don't remember having to do stretches in the middle of regular curriculum, because we had gym class. Well, they really didn't have a gym or a class dedicated for physical exercise. They more so incorporated it throughout or just each day of regular school.
Well, and I think especially in, I'm guessing, a school like Samantha's, where it's in a house, like they wouldn't have had a gym to go to. So doing stretches, you probably don't have to change into gym clothes. You can do it right at your desk. So it makes sense. But yeah, so chapter one ends with the girls heading back inside to do their stretches. So let's move on to chapter two. We've got Elsa, the maid, grumpily letting Samantha know that she has a guest in the parlor, which Samantha finds surprising because usually Grand Mary only puts adults in the parlor. So when she goes in there, she sees that it's Nellie.
Woo! She's back.
Yes. Grand Mary had a neighbor two houses down hire Nellie's parents, and Nellie and her sisters will help out as well. So now they will live in the rooms over the carriage house in Samantha's neighborhood. So Nellie is very excited and Samantha's very excited. Nellie also tells Samantha that she's going to go to school.
That was a plot twist for me.
Really?
Yeah, because you think, well, they are of very different social classes. So do they even go to school or offer school to kids like Nelly? And so when I heard that they were going to school together, I got excited, but that excitement then shortly got curved because of, again, remember that Norman Rockwell-esque picture of the four girls, and I'm thinking, oh shoot, Nelly's going to have to try and fit in. And so I immediately thought, where in that picture would Nelly fit in? And so I was like, oh, I started getting almost like nervous for Nelly before she even got started.
Yes, because she's going to have to join, and she's never been to school before, but she's not going to Samantha's school.
So that's right. So I thought
at first you thought,
yeah. So I was just like, oh, and then I was like, no, I think just let it play out. We're just starting chapter two. Let's get back to just being excited that Nelly's back, and I am, and was.
And I do know. I remember after book one, you did allude to. You said something about we're not going to see Nelly again. I remember.
Yes.
So this is a twist for you because you were thinking we weren't going to see her.
I think that what is going to happen, and I'm just predicting it again, I've only read two books. I'm thinking that the story of Samantha lies deeply in the story of Nelly. I think their stories are, unless there's like a series of Nelly books that we have yet to read, but I can't wait to read them if they exist.
There's at least one.
At least one?
Which
one
we will
set
read.
Or one book?
One book.
That's just Nelly.
Yes.
Is Sam involved?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
Okay.
But probably.
So Samantha is definitely a strong contender so far, being the only one that we've read as to my favorite.
Okay.
I get it. I get all the hype.
Yes. And yeah, Nelly definitely makes these books special, I think. Okay. So Monday comes and Samantha leads Nellie and her sisters to school. Nellie is starting in second grade because she knows her letters and can read a little, while her sisters will start in first. Samantha drops her off and then hurries to her own private school. And I think I was actually right there with you. I think this is when I figured out they weren't at the same school. I think I wasn't quite sure initially.
This is where I got bummed out. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, I guess they do have separate schools.
All day, Samantha again is worrying about Nelly and her sisters. She was wondering if they have enough food in the lard pails that they carried their lunch in, and just, you know, thinking about her throughout the day. So
also new characters, Nelly's sisters.
Yes, they could have been in the beginning in the portraits.
Absolutely.
But they weren't. Okay, so at 3 o'clock, she runs over to the public school. Jenny and Bridget, Nellie's sisters, are jumping up and down with excitement. They had a great day. They show her their books, and the books are tied together with a leather belt, which is fun because Samantha has an accessory that is like books tied together in a leather belt, which we do not have, but she does have that. So
not yet.
Exactly. Samantha looks for Nellie and finally finds her crouched by the bushes crying. Nellie was made fun of for being so big in second grade, and the teacher made her sit at the back of the room. The kids called her rag bag.
That is probably one of the worst things. And I'm laughing now, I'm sorry, but it's just like, who the heck, like, it just makes me think of, like, when I was a kid, I thought the term bonehead was like, so just like, oh, I got him with that one, right? Like, what? Like, that is terrible. Kids can be terrible to kids, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, ragbag, I've never heard that, but that cuts deep.
But Sam's reaction, though.
Yes, she's angry, and she tells Nellie that she must go back the next day. And meanwhile, Samantha storms back to her school, to Miss Crampton's Academy, and that leads us into chapter three.
Unbelievable. Another set of massive points for Sam's outrage, kind of basically, you know, taking over her, and just her natural care and defense of her friend is just like another reason why I'm really digging who Samantha is as a character. It was just her reaction to that. I was like, LFG, like, let's go. Mm-hmm. I'm Team Samantha all the way. Let's get Nelly right.
Yes. Yeah, so Samantha storms to her school, asks Miss Stevens to help her understand what she needs to teach Nellie so that Nellie can catch up. Miss Stevens gives her some books to start with and promises to help Samantha lesson plan each week, which was very sweet of Miss Stevens.
Unbelievable.
She also probably deserves a portrait at the beginning of the book. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I think now we're realizing why maybe not all the portraits are there, because there would be a lot of portraits.
Well, she could have taken Cornelia's place.
Yeah. You're
fine. Or Jesse's.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely room.
Yes. Samantha asks Grand Mary for permission to teach Nellie, and after some consideration, she says yes. So Samantha then goes to find Nellie, who is ironing clothes. Samantha asks her if she can come over, which, like, I was kind of like, read the room, Samantha, like, she's working.
Right.
But Nellie says that she can come over, she just needs to finish ironing, and so she'll be done in about a half hour. Nellie arrives later carrying Lydia, the doll Samantha had gifted her in the last book, and Lydia looks very well loved.
Yes.
Samantha takes Nellie upstairs past Elsa's room and Jesse's sewing room. I guess Jesse is mentioned here, to a third stairway. They enter a small tower that makes Samantha's house look like a palace. And then the room that they enter has windows on all four walls, which sounded so cool to me. And Samantha has set up the room to be a school with like a blackboard, some books, and other things they'll need to get Nellie caught up.
Do we ever get an image drawn out or like reference in any picture as to how the whole house kind of looks like? And I know we get parts of like what the rooms maybe, but like I'm curious to see, because it seems like a very grand house. And having done the tours that we've done where we kind of go through old houses, you know, the houses, even the big ones, seem small compared to now. So I'm curious to know just like what this tower would look like. And if how would they compare to houses today?
Yeah. So in the book, they do have an image of just the room, which I know just is not what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But the actual house, in some later editions of the book in Meet Samantha, instead of just like her against like a parchment style background, she's walking in front of her house. And so there is images in like different versions of the book.
Yeah. To me, it seems like they're very large old Victorian homes.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, that's cool.
We can Google it later and I'll show you. We also have like a scenes and settings thing, which is like this huge cardboard book that has scenes from Samantha's house, and so I'll show that to you because it does have her house.
I'm very interested.
Yeah, we can look at that. Okay, so
can we talk about the name of the school?
Yes. They decide to call the school Mount Better School because Samantha says they have better students than Mount Bedford, and Nellie says they have better teachers too, which was very sweet.
I know. That was just a sweet moment.
All right, going into chapter 4, we're back at Samantha's school where there's a speaking contest where the theme is progress in America. Two girls from Samantha's school will be chosen to compete against the Boys Academy and also the public school. At lunch, Samantha's friends are all talking about it. The winner gets a medal from the mayor and their name in the paper, and they're all very excited. Although Samantha's friend Ida says she gets too nervous in public speaking and will keep smelling salts in her pocket in case she faints, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, same.
Later, Samantha goes to pick up Nellie and her sisters. Nellie says the day wasn't as bad because the teacher left her alone this time. So then her and Samantha are, you know, walking together. And then Edith rides by and asks if Samantha's grandmother knows she's walking home with servants. Samantha is shocked by this question. Edith says her mother wouldn't want her playing with them. Nellie is embarrassed, but Samantha is mad and says Edith is worse than Eddie.
And that is a lot said in very little. That is really saying something.
Later, Samantha has dinner and she has a bell she rings to tell Mrs. Hawkins to clear the food and bring the dessert, which I just noted because I thought that was just like a fun fact that that was something that she had to like ring a bell.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting. something I've done as part of my job is give an etiquette lunch where I like told students how to eat. Like, let's say if they were doing an interview over lunch or something like that with an employer. And one piece of advice that I gave, simply because the person who did this presentation before me told me to give this advice, was to scoop soup away from you as you're eating, which is something that I never personally do, but I'm guessing it just like helps you like be less likely to spill. And they do mention it in this book that Samantha scoops her soup away from her. So,
and I remember thinking like, there's no way I'm going to change it up now. It's yeah. too late in the game for me.
Exactly. So yeah, there's a lot of discussion about Samantha's manners and what she's expected to do while eating with Grandma Mary. One of them is that she doesn't speak unless spoken to. So like finally, Grandma Mary asks her about school and then she can mention the contest. And Grandma Mary says, you know, change doesn't always mean progress. She seems a little bit grumpy about new inventions, but she does suggest that the telephone might be what she would choose for progress.
Yes, I did note that moment when Grand Mary says that mistake, it would be a mistake to assume change means progress. I thought it was a very profound and wise thing to say. And it just, I think, tracks with Grand Mary's character. But then she started like ranting on like all these inventions. And, you know, she got very crab apple-y about like all these new inventions happening way too fast. And it just got me thinking of like, oh, that's basically today's, you know, these millennials or whatever. And I just thought, oh, okay, it's give and take. And so I find myself going back and forth on Grand Mary, but we'll continue and get to that later on.
I love her so much. But I will say I'm going to be channel my inner Grand Mary right now, because I do feel like I can relate to her in the sense, because like part of me is like, how could you look at any of this stuff as bad as far as like the telephone and electricity? But I think about like AI.
Yes.
And how that is, I think, one of the things that we're discovering in this age that we're in. And just like how, to me, that doesn't always feel like progress.
Oh, absolutely. And also social media, right? There are things that were designed with great intentions, yet kind of almost serve as an antithesis to what the actual original goal was. So social media, the internet even, was designed to connect us more, but then ended up making us less connected in a way because everyone got safer or felt safer saying what they wanted behind a keyboard versus, you know, building those communication skills in person that I don't think are as prevalent as they were before. And so now I'm sounding like Grand Mary. And so in that sense, like, that's why I'm like, okay, she's making a lot of sense.
Can you tell we're in our 30s, I guess?
Right.
Okay, so Samantha also asks Grand Mary why Edith isn't allowed to play with Nellie. Grand Mary is surprised that Samantha had to even ask and says that Edith is a young lady, which kind of like surprised me that Grandma Mary spoke that way, because she's always been so kind about Nellie. But yeah, I mean, apparently she still has sort of like those traditional ideals that her neighbors also have. Samantha says that, kind of like pushes back and says, but you let me play with Nellie. And Grandma Mary corrects her and says that Samantha is helping Nellie. And Samantha does not like that answer.
No, and I think it just speaks to, again, Samantha kind of, she loves her time with Grand Mary. It's one of the things that she really enjoys, and she definitely was kind of beating around the bush, kind of waiting for a right time to ask that question of like, why I can't hang out with Nellie. And immediately Grand Mary clocks that, because I think Grand Mary really loves Sam and is going to tell her how it is, even if Grand Mary has to maybe describe something that isn't ideal for a child to hear, right? Where it's like, this is why you shouldn't play with your best friend, is because you're, you know, high class and she's serving class. And so when she initially started that conversation, I went, again, here's the roller coaster of Grand Mary. Like, just when I thought she was great, she's now saying like, no, you're just helping her. You're not actually friends. But that is, I think, again, part of my growing relationship with Grand Mary as she gets written in to this story.
Yeah, and I think too, to her credit, I think she's operating within the confines of societal expectations to the best of her ability to still like help people, but she's still like within those societal pressures to be like normal or to still behave a certain way. So
100%. And as mean as I thought maybe it was that she even had to mention this, like, I thought about it some more and was just like, you know, she is going to make sure that she raises not just a young lady, but a well-informed young lady. And I think that that goes to show, or just it shows through in her actions and how she acts when it comes to, you know, playing that part as a parental figure to Sam, Samantha. I keep calling her Sam.
I know. I've noticed that.
Because it's...
I think it's... Yeah, you're close with her now, so you can call her Sam. Okay, let's go into chapter 5. Uncle Gard visits, and Samantha is very happy to see Cornelia is not with him so she can get him all to herself.
Hilarious.
They play lawn tennis, and Samantha asks him for his thoughts on the progress content, and he suggests she feature electric lights or the automobile. She doesn't like the automobile suggestion because you can't travel too far from a drugstore because of having to have gasoline. And she said they're not as fun as horses. And this just made me think of like how sometimes I've thought about like electric cars the same way.
Yes.
And it's just so funny because it's like, who knows, maybe in the future they'll be the more prevalent type of vehicle and people will think it's funny that we felt that way about electric cars.
100%. And the same thing about... honestly, the light bulb, people were so hell-bent on kerosene lamps serving as light. And I remember that was probably one of my favorite parts of history is that transition when essentially I think it was you had Edison and like Rockefeller and like J.P. Morgan from Chase all kind of going at it to... See, you know, it was a battle between kerosene and electricity, and it was just a very interesting point in American history that I loved seeing kind of tied in into this story through the topic of the contest, but also the suggestions being made by the people that Sam kind of went to for suggestions as to like, what should I talk about?
Yeah, I loved that they featured so many different viewpoints because, it was just fun to hear all of the different inventions during this time because there's just so many. And so Mrs. Hawkins, she's the cook. She suggests the gas stove because it doesn't get filled with ashes and you don't have to worry about keeping the coals hot all day. Hawkins, who is, I think, sort of like the butler.
Yes.
He mentions factories because they make things fast and cheap. And so now every day, Samantha and Nellie are going to the private school where Nellie practices what she's learning. And Samantha is just like working on this assignment.
One sweet thing about that was, or that I noticed, was that, like, you know, Nellie knew and could see just how serious Sam was taking this contest. And I thought it was sweet that, like, she would try not to interrupt her. Like, it was just like she's rooting her on through her silence.
Yes. As much as Samantha, I think, cares about Nellie, and we see that, we also see ways that Nellie cares about Samantha throughout the book, which is very sweet.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on, what do you, if you had to pick a one of the most or very important invention that you would have as your speech to enter in this contest, what invention would you say would be one that created a lot of progress in America? Let's keep it to the era of Sam. And if you were one of her friends or one of the people that she would go to for a suggestion, what would you suggest to her as potentially one she should write on and one that could really, I think, speak to progress in America?
Well, did you want to share yours first?
So the one that I thought of was penicillin, especially then with just people not living as long. And I think a lot of different diseases all going around. I thought it's really hard for me to see something more important than penicillin, since all those other inventions would mean nothing if people didn't live long enough to enjoy them.
I think that's good, but I'm going to say the Tootsie Roll.
No, just the kidding. The dance or the candy. I think we're talking the candy just because of the time period, but a great suggestion nonetheless.
No, I swear to you, before you said that, that's what I was thinking too. Because
penicillin,
yeah. Because I think like all the other stuff is obviously very important, but I think that just like obviously lives is going to be the most important thing. So something that saves lives, you can't really beat that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, good call. I also, I don't know when like flush toilets came about, but I feel like that would be legit high up on my list as well.
Agreed.
Okay, so one day, so back to the story. One day, Edith and another classmate see Nellie and Samantha walking together again. And so she makes fun of Samantha again. And Samantha says that she wishes she could fight them. I think she says something like, "If I wish I was a boy so I could fight them," or something like that. When she gets home, she overhears some neighbors, including Eddie's mom, talking to Grandmary. Before I get into like what they're talking about, I did a little bit of a deep dive here because Samantha mentions calling cards. So Samantha says that she didn't even need to look at the calling cards to know who was visiting. And I was just curious, like, what exactly was meant by that? Like, I've heard this term before and I've always just thought it was sort of like a business card. But then I was like, why? I guess I didn't understand, like, why would there be calling cards out for people who were currently visiting? So I just was curious, like, what that custom was. Did you know anything about calling cards before this?
Oh, no, I had no idea.
Okay. So just like a little bit of history about these. So they are sort of like a business card, but honestly, even more simple. So like it might even just have your name on there. Where I'm getting this information, I will say I tried to find like a very reliable source. I always look in like the Peek into the Past in Samantha's book first. And then I do have Welcome to Samantha's World. So those are the first places I check. Didn't see anything. So I went online. And this is from a place called recollections.biz. So
it's got to be awesome.
Yeah. I don't know why they would make this up, though. So hopefully this is accurate. But it says that you can put your card in a convenient place in the hall or in the tray the servant holds out for you and mention your name to the manservant if there is one. A man or maid usually takes the card on a tray and stands holding the curtains aside for you to enter, speaking your name audibly at the same time. It reminds me of the garden party in The Office where, yes, like I think they present their name on a card for Dwight to like shout out. Maybe this is where they got that idea, like the writers from The Office, because it is sort of it seems like a sort of similar custom where like the servant will announce you as you arrive. They are also used in a way that makes more sense to me, which is like if you visit someone and they're not there, you leave your card to say like, "Hey, I was here," which like to me that makes sense. And there is like a funny faux pas that apparently was a thing back then where you had to be very careful to not drop someone else's card. So like, let's say I go over to a friend's house, they're not there. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave my card so they know I came, but I'm also going to leave Victor's card so that he gets a little like bonus props for visiting, even though he actually didn't. And that was like a huge faux pas to like leave someone's card who wasn't actually visiting.
That's amazing. I definitely wasn't thinking about all that, but just hearing you kind of describe what that faux pas was, it just kind of affirms to me that, you know, part of human nature is that we're gonna hustle if we're gonna try, you know, like, yes, if there's an ability there where I can hustle to make life a little bit easier, or if I can support my friend to make life a little bit easier, we're gonna do that. Like, well, you know, everything short of being illegal, we're gonna find a way to hustle.
I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, people don't change. Like, we're the same right as we were 120 years ago. So I thought that was funny. And then like last, I did look up, you know, they mentioned like a tray that you would place your calling card on. And there's these like beautiful trays that they used to have. And I feel like that would be such a cool antique if you're an antique collector to put in your home. Or they have calling card holders that like, I mean, nowadays you can get like business card holders, but they're just like these very beautiful antique, like usually silver card holders. I'm like, okay, I need to, even though I don't ever use business cards, I really want one now.
Question.
Yeah.
What would your calling card say? How would I introduce it?
Well, okay, I will say if it was based on what I'm reading, it would just say my full name, my first and last name.
Oh, okay. So there's no description.
I mean, they said they're fairly simple.
Yeah.
They did show some examples of calling cards that were more elaborate, but they said those were typically saved for like special occasions like holidays.
Okay, gotcha. And you basically could choose to write what's on that calling card. Like, I don't know if you know what lengths they would take to verify that information. For me, I would just say, Lord of Dad Jokes, here comes Victor Joaquin.
There you go. Yeah. So like it could still be simple, your name, but with a fun title. Okay. So Now, thank you for letting me do that deep dive. To me, when I read history books, I'm way more fascinated by the sort of the minutia like that and like yes. the day-to-day stuff than like the grand things happening.
Agreed. I have found myself pausing to Google while reading more so than probably any other book reading experience before.
Yeah. And that's one thing I like about these books is that they're kind of more slice of life. Like there's like big stuff happening, but it's not like taking place during a war or front lines or anything. It's just sort of like slice of life of this girl, Samantha.
Yeah. And it plays second to the story. Whereas oftentimes World War II or an important moment in history plays par to the main characters.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I love about these books. Okay, so back to the conversation between Grand Mary and her neighbors. They're talking about how horrible it is that Nellie's family are living in the neighborhood. The neighbors are. And Grand Mary says actually it was her idea, and the other two women look embarrassed. Edith's mom is one of the ones who's there, though, and she doubles down, saying that Edith has said that they all look filthy, like Nellie's family looks filthy. Grand Mary sticks up for them, and Samantha notices a frosty look come over her, but the neighbors don't notice. So Samantha knows that this is ticking off her grandmother.
That was a great part in the story, how she was like, oh, these women just don't understand how cooked they're about to get with Grand Mary here, just giving them that icy stare. And I thought, man, what a flex to be like, well, actually, it was my idea.
Yeah.
And then them just kind of like shutting down and embarrassed. I was like, all right.
Yeah, I thought I kind of was like hoping that Grand Mary would put them in their place a little bit more. But right. I mean, I still like that scene a lot. And like that Grand Mary clearly is not on like these mean neighbors' sides.
Yep. Back on Grand Mary's side. I'm all in on Grand Mary.
Good, good, good. Okay. And so then, another thing too is that they question if Samantha should be spending time with Nellie and her family. And Grand Mary says she thinks Samantha is doing a great deal of good. So again, just like doubles down that she's cool with all this. Later that week, Samantha gives her progress speech to her academy about factories in America and how they are beneficial. She ends up winning and she's able to compete with the other schools. And of course, the other winner is Edith.
Yep. Surprise, surprise. We're not getting rid of Edith that easily. I do have to say during the in the portion of the book, one gripe would for me was not hearing what Samantha's friends wrote about.
I
would have been curious to know what Ruth would have chose, what Hella would have chose, what Ida is her name,
mm-hmm.
would have chose. We didn't get to hear much.
I think they said
that.
A couple people's, but or maybe I'm thinking of just the final contest.
Because we didn't hear it in this chapter, Edith's topic. It was from what I can remember, the only topic we know of is Samantha's.
Okay, yeah.
Which I have to say, when I learned that Samantha eventually ended up choosing American factories, I was slightly disappointed. I thought, I don't know, she would have chosen something more exciting.
Yeah, I was surprised too, also because like the idea came from Hawkins, who like we just like don't hear much about, and I don't think she's super close with. I would have just assumed she would have more likely have chosen like Grand Mary's or Uncle Guard's suggestions, but yeah, I mean, we'll see why she, I mean, like it does play into the plot very well, so we'll talk about that with chapter 6. So later, Nellie asks Samantha to hear her speech. So she sees, you know, that Samantha won and she's very excited for her friend and wants to hear the speech. So Samantha proudly gives her speech. But instead of applause, Nellie just kind of like looks down and looks a little bit anxious.
I remember when she when this happened in the story, I was thinking, boy, how's Nellie going to take this? And as they were describing how she was expecting a great reaction, I was like, oh, okay, I don't think she's going to like this. And that was confirmed. Now, she was very polite about it in saying, but I thought Samantha's reaction, or I guess awareness to know that, like, okay, Nellie's just being polite. Like, that goes to show just how developed their, and how strong their relationship has developed into, of her being able to, like, hear through Nellie's politeness.
Yeah, because like Nellie does say like it's nice, but Samantha can tell that something's off. And so she asks, and Nellie explains that the Speech was nice, but it wasn't true. And she reminded Samantha that she used to work in a factory. Hello. Samantha's kind of like, oh, yeah, I should have probably asked.
Yeah, she's been telling you this entire time. How did you not pick this up by now?
And so, yeah, Nellie describes working there. And she said, you know, she worked from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day but Sunday. She talks about having to stand the entire time, how the room was filled with dust and fuzz, making it hard to breathe. And it was too hot in the summer and freezing in the winter. And this part made me, like, the most horrified. But, like, in the winter, they couldn't wear shoes because they would have to climb the equipment. So they would be freezing and not wearing shoes. And so, oh, and then actually this is the worst part. She talks about seeing a girl's hair get caught in a machine and how the girl nearly died. So definitely a lot of horrors that are being described. And Nellie says that, you know, she only got paid $1.80 a week, which, you know, using the Bureau of Labor Statistics from 1913 would be about $60 a week. And anyway, she mentions that that's why thread is so cheap. So Samantha, I loved this description because Samantha doesn't know what to say, but she feels tingly and achy, which I just, like, that was such a great descriptor because I think we've all been there before when just something is so upsetting that you just feel it.
But don't really understand why it's upsetting.
Yeah, or like how to articulate your thoughts about it.
Right.
So now we jump forward to the actual contest between all the schools. It's in an opera house and Granberry is in the second row looking as regal as ever. This is where they did go over, you know, a couple of the people's speeches and kind of gave their topics, which was interesting. I'm with you, Victor. Like, it would have been nice to see what her friends talked about. But we did get to see, you know, Edith go. She goes before Samantha and talks about how machines make it so that anyone can become wealthy. And now it's Samantha's turn. She has actually decided to change her speech, and instead she talks about how factories can hurt children, and this means they haven't made good progress in America. Samantha ends her speech with, "And I believe Americans want to be good. I believe we want to be kind. And if we are kind, I believe we will take care of the children. Then we can truly be proud of our factories and our progress." After she says that, there is a long silence and Granberry looks shocked. Then she looks at Nellie, Granberry does, and notices her eyes shining and understands how Samantha knew this information. This is where, like, my eyes started to shine a little bit too. Aww. I think I just was very touched that, you know, Nellie obviously was very touched by this speech and that Granberry was able to understand what was going on and feel proud. And Granberry does feel proud and she starts to clap, and as soon as she does this, she is joined by the rest of the room.
Very similar to book one. You know, Samantha makes Granberry very proud by her actions, and so I definitely loved that moment. I thought it was super sweet.
Yeah, it was probably my favorite moment of the book. And Edith is stewing over there. She's mad. And then the book flashes forward to Nellie and Samantha celebrating Samantha's win in their makeshift school. Mrs. Hawkins made them lemonade and little cakes and cookies. Nellie also says she's celebrating too because she moved up to third grade.
Woo!
Samantha notices that Nellie doesn't look very happy, so she asks why, and Nellie says that she has to now sit next to Eddie.
That was a fun, I thought, point, because it was like, very, you know, after having such an intense portion of the book of, like, going through all those just, like, terrible things, learn, and then seeing Samantha's kind of rising up to the occasion to, like, not be afraid to fix her contest winning entry into this next round of the contest, I thought it was just a very neat and lighthearted moment where it was like, yep, you know, the story's done. And that was just not only a good way to end the book, but a nice way to segue into maybe, like, future books.
Yeah, it was just like a fun, light way. And this is why I love children's lit, because I feel like often they end with, like, a light tone.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it ends with that. And Samantha, you know, she's sympathetic and she says that they will just have to work really hard to get Nellie moved up to the front of the class. So I thought that was a fun way to end it. Okay, so real quick, I'm going to share a media pairing for this, and then we can give our rating. So my media pairing is kind of a stretch to say it's like not a movie or a TV show, but basically it's a ride. It's the Carousel of Progress at Disney World, and you can watch it on YouTube. So I suggest if you just Google, or sorry, if you just like put in the search bar for YouTube, Carousel of Progress Disney, you can watch like just the first 5 minutes, and they'll talk about the year. It's like the turn of the century. I want to say it's specifically set in 1904, and there's like an animatronic man talking about all of the inventions of that time. And so it's just like a really cool thing to watch paired with this, because it just goes so perfectly. And so I'm going to actually have Victor watch it right now, and you can give your thoughts. So let's just take a brief break, and then you can share your thoughts.
Excellent.
All right, so we just finished the first chunk. I didn't make him watch the full 20-minute show, but we watched the first chunk, which is set, like I said, in the early 1900s. So what did you think?
When was this recorded? Do you know? Or is it something that still goes on?
Yeah, the ride is still there. I think it was created, I want to say, in 1964 for the World Fair, I think. So gotcha. It was created in the 1960s, but it's still there today.
I thought it was a unique way to, I think, depict a specific era in American history. And would I be like crazy about it to go see it? That one is still up for debate for me. But I'm always like, I love learning about history. I don't know if animatronics are my favorite or the route I would take, but not terrible either. I think, you know, I can certainly learn some through animatronics. I don't know. I just, animatronics to me, some of them kind of creep me out.
Here's a hot tip for anyone going to Disney World. If you want to ride with no weight, and you want to get out of the heat for 20 minutes, it's like a great choice. It's quiet. It's dark. There's hardly ever a wait. You can just chill in there. I like it just for like nostalgia, but it is kind of funky. But I do think that it's like, especially if you're reading these books with children, it's probably like a fun thing to watch with them just to like see some visuals of the different inventions of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so before we move on to talking about the doll with Katie, like the collection for book two, Victor, what would you rate this book out of 5?
This one was easy for me, an easy 5 out of 5. I enjoyed it more than the first book, which, if I remember correctly, I think I gave it a 5.
Mm-hmm.
That was a soft 5 compared to this one. This one I really enjoyed. I thought the conflict was both entertaining, endearing, but also it, for me, I think resonates with a lot of maybe my insecurities growing up as a kid of, you know, not being, you know, with part of like the wealthiest class, but also kind of going to a new school that you may not really mirror what you think you're seeing, I guess, and just feel a little bit out of place. So resonate with me more this book than the previous one. Strong 5. All
yeah,
around.
Good.
And also, I think Grand Mary is becoming my favorite character.
Yeah.
She's almost like that Uncle Feeny.
Yeah.
Wise.
Uncle Feeny.
Like, where, like, you're, like
Mr. Feeny.
Mr. Feeny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're, you know, he's a curmudgeon most of the time, but done in a way that is purposeful and not mean.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. She's like one of those just great. I love a character like that. That's not like McGonagall as well in Harry Potter. I feel like has a similar vibe where they're like kind of like strict, a little bit harsh. I want to say harsh isn't the right word, but yeah, also very warm, and they have like a gooey center. So
and they have a sense of humor, or they have that little lightheartedness, but buried deeper than most, but not, you know, buried so deep that it never comes out.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you're coming around to her. And I would also give this another 5. I enjoyed it as well.
Good. Sweet.
All right. Thanks. And let's move on to Katie. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to talk about Samantha Learns a Lesson with you.
Me too.
So before we get into the doll, did you get a chance to read the book?
I did.
What was your rating and overall thoughts?
It was another 5 out of 5. actually forgot the plot of this one. So I had remembered some of Meet Samantha when I started reading that one. And then this one, I really forgot it and remembered kind of halfway through when the girls are talking up in the attic. This book has such great characters. I feel like I fell in love, even more in love with Samantha and Nellie, but especially Nellie during this book. And I think it just refueled for me why I got Nellie as a second character as opposed to another doll, because her and Samantha are just so great and perfectly complement each other as friends and just have two different demeanors. And it's just awesome to see.
And I love that they're both good friends to each other.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's like it feels equal, even though they're not in society wouldn't be deemed as equals. I feel like in their friendship, they very much treat each other like equals and both show up for each other in different ways.
Absolutely.
Which I love to see that too. So what was, you said five. That's what Victor and I gave it as well.
And I actually did go through and read the historical notes this time. And I really just, can we talk about the fact that people swam on ropes?
Yeah, they mentioned it in the book. And actually, this was part of the conversation Victor and I had that I think I had to cut from our conversation because we went on a little bit of a tangent. But he didn't believe that it was actually a thing. And so I had to show him the picture
in the back of the book
because it seems wild. Yeah. So basically, like someone is strung up on a harness where there is no water in sight and they're like swimming in the air
in Victorian garb.
Yes.
Yes.
Very wild.
Because then I was thinking during the first chapter, too, I was like, imagine doing squats when you've got pedophores and pantaloons or whatever they call them, right? Tights, Mary Janes, and this heavy wool dress that you're wearing to school and you're being forced to do squats. That sounds miserable.
I don't like to do squats in the best of conditions, let alone with all that going on.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of what they're wearing, we can segue into the doll and her outfit. So for Samantha learns a lesson. She did have like a school dress is what I think most people call it. It is also known as the Buster Brown dress. And it is a gray flannel drop-waisted dress. It has a white high collar, 6 white buttons in 2 rows on the bodice. There's a black bow tie at the neck. She has white cuffs, a pleated skirt. The front bodice and the hem of the skirt are top stitched in white. And then there are Velcros at the sleeves and up the back. And it came with a satin hair bow. They did have a dress like your doll version of this outfit, so like you could purchase this in a kid size, and there also was a pattern that was released to make the outfit yourself. It cost $9.95 in 1990, so that would be pretty cool if anyone out there owned this or made it, because it is a pretty fun dress. And then real quick about the name Buster Brown, this was a popular newspaper comic book character of the era. The dress is intended to evoke his clothing style as drawn in the comics. So it was a boy suit, so they sort of just morphed it into a dress. And I do want you, Katie, to look at the picture really quick of Buster Brown, because to me, this is the creepiest looking character I have ever seen.
He did look pretty creepy. And honestly, I feel like the outfits aren't too similar, so it's quite a stretch of a name.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people probably just refer to it as the Buster or the school dress.
The school dress.
Yes. There were some images released in 2021. I think I got this from the wiki. So I will say I like to try to like reference where I get certain things just in case it's not accurate. But from the wiki of Samantha's outfit, it says that there were some images released in 2021 for the 35th anniversary. And in those images, it revealed that Samantha's Meet outfit at early stages had been designed to look like this outfit. So she could have originally been in a different universe, had her Meet outfit be this school outfit instead, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I'm glad they switched.
Do you prefer the Meet outfit?
I do. I feel like the school outfit definitely gives school uniform. And so I'm glad her original like Meet dress didn't look like that. I don't think she would have been as popular or as appealing to wide audiences with the Buster Brown dress.
And it's just, I mean, it's gray, which like gray is a fine color, but I think when you're marketing to children, it's probably not the first color
it's
that comes
sad.
To your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do like, I've heard it's a very good quality dress, especially the earlier versions. And I don't personally own it, but I do probably plan to get it in my collection at some point. But I like it. I don't love it. I feel like I probably honestly would rank it similar to the Meet outfit, in my opinion. Like they're both maybe like 4 out of 5 stars for me. I like them. don't love either, but I do agree that her meat outfit was a better choice for her to start with. Both that one and the Be Forever, I think.
Absolutely. Next in Samantha's collection, we have her school desk. So this was introduced in the 90s, early 90s, and retired in 2008. And this desk, I did not have it, but I did have something similar, and it just makes me really think back on like playing school as a kid. My parents got a similar desk from my sisters and I, and they all had like the open top where you could put stuff inside, had a little similar bench similar to Samantha's. And Samantha's does look perfect for passing notes back and forth in school. So that was another part of Samantha's collection. I think if you were totally into all of the accessories, this desk definitely would have been a fun grab to have with all of the dolls.
So the desks that you and your sisters had, were they your size or doll sized?
They were our sized. Oh, so cool. They were pretty big. I think we kept them into very late childhood, early teenage years before we got maybe bigger desks. But they were well loved, well used, and we played school quite a bit with those. So I think this book in particular was very nostalgic from like my early years of like playing school and then just my interest in education.
Yeah, I don't know if we've said this before, but both Katie and I were, did we say this? We were going to be teachers, both of us, and neither of us ended up being teachers. Well, I was for a little while, but now we both work in higher ed, so still in education.
So you'll hear us nerding out a little bit about that later.
And then she does have, she does come with a lunch, Samantha, if you wanted to purchase it separately. It's in a little, I think they call it a tea tin. I do own it myself, and it has a handkerchief inside. It comes with, my version comes with a peach that is split into two, and my version also comes with a full-sized watercress sandwich and a gingerbread cookie. Now there is an earlier version that comes with like a peach that is not split into two, half a watercress sandwich, and a deviled egg. So there are slightly different ones. I believe that the one I have was introduced in 2007. I'm not quite sure when mine was introduced, but it is so cute. It's one of my favorite things I own. I just love the lunches, and the peach is like huge. Like you just forget how, you know, you think these are for dolls, so you picture all of the pieces being so tiny, but they're not, like, because these are 18-inch dolls. So like the peach is like a decent size, and they're just so fun to like handle and play with. And my daughter, I have to watch her because they are choking hazards, but like with my, you know, supervision, I will let her play with it a little bit, and she loves to like pretend feed the food to the dolls. So it's very fun.
And I feel like with doll accessories too, the proportions are probably so hard to get accurate and right. And yeah, so definitely probably a choking hazard for a 2-year-old, but
yes, but
very fun as an adult.
Super fun. I love all of the lunches. And yeah, this is a no exception. It's a good one.
All right. And then Samantha's school collection also comes with the bookstrap and supplies. So this accessory set includes a red leather and wooden bookstrap with silver buckles and a red leather handle. It also comes with a black and white composition book, not unsimilar to the ones we all probably used in school. And Samantha Parkington's name is on the cover and her very fine penmanship that they had to practice. It also comes with a report book with a cream cover, and the book itself says the report book regarding the reports of Samantha Parkington, Miss Crampton's Academy for the year 1904-1905. So this is essentially Samantha's grade book. Some of her grades are filled in, and you can see her work, really your transcript in 1900s fashion. An abridged version of the Baldwin primer is also included, as well as a green felt pen wipe with a blue handled nib pen with a cork wrap. Very intricate writing utensils. And then it also comes with two red functional pencils and a wooden pencil box with a sliding top.
The pencil box is so cute.
I had one of those too. My grandpa built me one and it was so fun to use.
Really?
Yeah.
So speaking of that, did you own anything from this collection?
I did not. I don't think I had a lot of the, really for any of the dolls, their accessory sets from any of the books.
Okay.
I think if I had any of their accessories, it was really the clothes that they came with and their meat outfits. Like, I know I had that for Julie. and maybe a few of the other dolls.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure, I think if I was a kid and collecting this stuff, I would have prioritized the dolls. So if I was asking for stuff, that's what I would have wanted more than like extra accessories.
The dolls and the clothes, I think, were my focus. But we definitely, I think we turned, and I don't know, I don't remember if I told this story already, but my sister, even like when we first got it started playing with all of the dolls, we were focused on like crafting our own accessories. So like their beds were never something we bought. Like we made our own beds. My grandparents built us. My grandpa was a woodworker, so he built like my pencil box. He built us doll beds, doll bunk beds, and my grandma sewed blankets and pillowcases
sweet.
For them. So none of the accessories from the actual American Girl catalog we really had, because we would just turn other things into accessories and desks. And my sister built a balance beam with a screwdriver when she was like 10. So, you know,
I feel like that
lends itself to creativity in other areas too.
And that's just as good, if not better, I feel like, when you can say that someone you love made it for you or you made it yourself.
Absolutely.
Also, I'm just realizing I did not ask you if you have a media pairing for this book, Samantha Learns a Lesson.
I do. This one's such a stretch. So like Grace and I said, we were both education majors. We're both becoming teachers. And then my background for my grad degree is in higher education. And so this book is really a stretch for a recommendation meeting pairing. But one book I read in grad school is called Student Services, A Handbook for the Profession, by John H. Shaw, Susan R. Jones, and Vasti Torres. And it specifically in chapter one chronicles like the history of higher education. So if you are a nonfiction lover, you like history, I was finding it fascinating while reading Samantha Learns a Lesson, just even throughout reading the book. And then in the back in the historical section, when they kind of dive into what school was like for young girls at this time, I was really fascinated by all of that and how education has looked over the past 150 years, or really since America was, you know, introducing a school system as a whole. So this book really just dives into how education's evolved over time, especially like colleges and universities. But the book at the back also mentions that a college education was really a privilege even for somebody as wealthy as Samantha back in the early 1900s. And so this chapter, I kind of looked back, talks about that time frame, and only schools like Harvard and Columbia enrolled over 5,000 students, which is such a flip from enrollment numbers today. So that's, I think, kind of an interesting just tidbit back in history, is just how Harvard and Columbia were kind of more accessible than maybe some other institutions. But if you are a history buff and love nonfiction, that is my recommendation kind of for this time period, but it also goes through all of the American girls' time periods throughout the history of colleges and how they got started in the U.S.
I think that's a perfect recommendation, and it sounds like it would go great with any of this like sort of second book in the girls' series.
Absolutely.
I'm interested now too, and it also is very different than my recommendation, which I talked to you about with Victor, which was a 5-minute clip of a Disney ride. So
well, that's great too, because that's a totally different genre. If you are into chapter textbooks, mine is for you.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on to the craft. And Katie, for this one, you did a craft, and what can you describe what you did?
I did. So I did the pressed flowers and ferns from Samantha's craft book. So it really just was explaining how to press flowers, which is something I have always wanted to do but have never actually gotten around to. So I got some flowers from a farmer's market, like local, very fall colored flowers here. And then when the instructions said to do it, it said to leave at least a week. Online, I saw that you're supposed to do it for maybe like 4 weeks. So this craft is taking longer than I initially thought. But my plan is to use the pressed flowers for bookmarks. I am doing a book day with friends soon and just wanted to kind of bring a gift for everybody too. So I'm going to make some bookmarks out of the pressed flowers, but I just checked on them the other day and they're looking pretty flat. So excited to actually finish out this craft. But so far, costs I would rate as a 5. It's I mean, you can go outside and literally pick petals off of wildflowers if you need to. The bouquet I got was super cheap. So definitely something to give the flowers a second life if you love fresh flowers. Ease is, I'm going to give a 3 just because it's taking a lot longer than I thought it would take to dry out the flowers the traditional way. And I'll say too, I think you can dry flowers in the microwave, which is something that I was not confident in, and I did not want to set flower petals on fire in my microwave. So I did it the good old fashioned between two book pages and some weights. And so that's just taking a little longer, but usability will be 5 because I have a lot of ideas for different craft ideas I can just use the petals for. So overall, I'd say a 4.
And I think that this is such a great craft to try out because, like you said, there's so many ways you can use them. And I think they would make beautiful gifts to make bookmarks. Or I've just seen even people like frame, you know, flowers. I've seen people press their wedding bouquets, or, you know, you could do like a corsage or something like that just to save your memories, which I think is so sweet.
Yeah, I've seen people use them for like resin earrings or jewelry, too. So lots of different ways you can use them. But definitely, I think, makes me think of the Victorian era for some reason.
Yeah,
specifically, which is a great craft to include with Samantha. But I'm curious why that's included just in hers and not elsewhere. But
yeah. And I know so far, I don't think they've mentioned this as a craft in the books, the first two books. But maybe it'll be mentioned at some point. I don't think that the craft books and the cookbooks, you know, I don't think they always reference stuff. So it must just be like, oh, if they were doing it at that time, regardless of if that was peak popularity, maybe they just include it. But I've seen shops and online, you can buy flower press kits, which I find sort of interesting because it sounds like you literally can just use a book.
And I think if you're doing something like a wedding bouquet, I've seen the flower press kits actually come with 2 pieces of like glass where you're actually kind of framing it.
Okay.
So I wonder if that's more for people who are looking to display the flowers as pressed. Okay. Whereas I'm pressing them and then I'll probably take them off the book and use them separately. Yeah. So if you like the arranged flowers that you have, I think you can buy those pressed kits.
Okay.
To frame them.
Is this leaving any residue or anything on your book so far that you've noticed?
I put wax paper and watercolor paper in between. So I actually laid the flower petals on watercolor paper, and I was hoping if they did transfer, that'd be a cool like relief into the watercolor paper.
Yeah.
But so far it looks like they haven't left any residue.
Okay.
So I think that paper I'll just have to turn into bookmarks and maybe watercolor on top of them. But I did specifically put wax paper on in between the pages too, because I didn't want my actual books to get any sticky residue or anything from the petals on them.
That was very smart of you.
I was trying to be as least messy as possible.
I am excited to see these when they are ready, and we will post.
Well, there may be a bookmark coming your way. So
ooh, I'm excited. And also for listeners, I do want a quick plug because I always forget to, that we have an Instagram account. So if you want to see what Katie's pressed flowers look like at the end and the other things that we talk about, please check it out. It's at American Girl Unboxed on Instagram. So, all right, now we'll chat about the recipe that I made from Samantha's cookbook.
So excited to hear about this.
I decided to do the carrot soup, which was kind of a shock to me because when I was flipping through, that was one of the last things that I wanted to make. I do like soup, but it's just been kind of hot. And so I haven't really felt like eating soup. But I don't know if it was just a randomly cooler day or just it sounded good all of a sudden. I will say my daughter likes carrots. And so it did sort of help me think, okay, well, this would be a good way for her to get some vegetables. So I just decided to give it a try. Also, the recipe did seem pretty simple and easy. So for cost, I would give this like a 4 out of 5. Actually, I would give it a 5 out of 5. I believe I had most of the ingredients already and then just needed to buy a pound of carrots. And so that really wasn't that costly. For ease, I would give it a 4 out of 5. I think I'm not someone who makes mashed potatoes often. I love mashed potatoes, but I don't make mashed potatoes often. So I feel like I'm not super skilled yet at knowing when a vegetable is ready to be mashed. And so for me, when I made this, the one flaw, I feel like the taste was really good. Oh, the other thing I had to buy, I'm just remembering, was cayenne pepper because I didn't have any in my cupboard, but a lot of people do already. And I will say the cayenne pepper added a really good flavor to it. I was a little worried because I didn't know if it would be too spicy, but it was just the perfect amount of heat, and Veda, my daughter, loved it. But the ease, yeah, the mashing of the carrots, that was like the one flaw, in my opinion, is that I didn't, I think, cook them quite enough. I followed the directions exactly. And, you know, boiled it for however long it said. And then I pierced it with a fork and they felt soft enough. But then when I mashed it with my potato masher, I just feel like they were still a little bit too firm. So they ended up being slightly chunky. And so when I made the soup, it wasn't perfectly creamy. There are some chunks in there. It still the flavor was great. And so for the taste, I actually would give it probably a 5 out of 5. No, I would give it a 4 out of 5 because, you know, it's still not probably my number one favorite soup, but it was good. I would recommend it. And I would just say, make sure you cook the carrots long enough so that you can mash them till they're smooth. Cause I do feel like the texture of something does impact the experience. And like, even though it doesn't change the flavor, it feels like it does.
So. Especially with soup.
Yeah. So I would say overall, I would give it a 4 out of 5. I would try it again. My daughter ate some of it, really liked it. And again, it was pretty simple to make. So
it sounds like a good replacement for a tomato or a squash soup in the fall with like a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah. Oh,
sounds
yeah.
Sounds great.
Actually, that would work perfect. And again, if you're feeling like you need, if you have kids and they don't get a lot of vegetables, that might be a way to get them to have
sneak
some carrots
in there.
Because, yeah, I think it is a good replacement for some of those other ones that are also very good though. That wraps up what we have to talk about today for Samantha Learns a Lesson. Thank you for joining us and for listening, and we hope you tune into a future episode soon.